Sounds a bit disjointed, but
Accession number 28657, Mr. Jeff King, Reel 11. Now, what about you're still not, you're no longer in the forward position, are you? Just as you hadn't been with the H2S, you're back alongside the Navigator.
Yes,
and that would be the case with all your raids in your new.
Yes, in all my Pathfinder raids, for the 20 that we did, I'd be sitting beside the Navigator, operating my H2S set.
And it is, of course, still a Lancaster.
It's still a Lank, yes.
Now, therefore, you don't. The detail does go away quite a lot in the raids you did. And I'm not sure you did quite as many as you did in the first tour.
No, only did 20 on Pathfinders.
Now, are there any raids you particularly remember? The first three, you seem to start in May, Brunswick, Eindhoven, and, Nantes. Do you remember anything about those?
Yes, on the Brunswick raid, there was cloud, and we had to abort. But the main thing I remember about that was on our return, I had been awarded the DFC.
Now, how important? It's a distinguished flag. It's an important award. How did you feel about it? I mean, what did?
Well, I was thrilled to bits, obviously. I was the second in the crew to be awarded the DFC. The others were to follow very shortly afterwards. But I must admit, it gave me great pleasure. In fact, I've got the citation and everything now that I was given at the time.
Now, so that's the main thing you remember about the Brunswick. Anything else about Eindhoven or?
Eindhoven followed the Brunswick raid, and here again, coming back to the Brunswick raid, not only did we run into problems with the cloud, but the Master Bombers RT had gone US, so of course the whole thing became an aborted sortie. Eindhoven, the target there was the Phillips factory, and again, cloud was the main problem. And, of course, on these smaller targets, we had to be so precise so as to avoid killing the civilian population, the Dutch. In this case, would have been the Dutch population near at hand. So that was aborted.
And then Nantes, I presume a similar sort of thing. Again, there's problems, aren't there?
Yes, engine overheating, if I remember rightly, on that particular raid. And again, our RT went for a burden, so we had to abort that raid. But in actual fact, on that raid, we flew quite low over France. And rather than bring the bomb load back, I bombed a major crossroad.
Now, the next thing is you get 7 days leave, and you get quite a reception when you go back home. Now, tell me about that, because that's unusual.
Yes. Of course, I lived in a small village, and unbeknown to me, it had been notified. The local paper had been notified of my award of the Distinguished Flying Cross, and the population of our village had arranged a social evening. And as it so happened, my skipper had come home with me, and we were greeted by the whole village, main street, being hung with buntings, "Welcome home, Jeff." And that evening, we were entertained at a social evening in the village hall. And I was presented with an inscribed cigarette case, which I valued very much. But by that time, I must admit, I'd given up smoking.
Now, while you were on leave, the D-Day took place. Now, what were your reactions to D-Day? I mean, what did you think?
Well, we knew, basically, that it was in the offing. And on the particular day, the Yanks at Stansted put on a terrific display with pyrotechnics, so we knew that D-Day had taken place. And my skip and myself, we went back to base immediately, as did the rest of the crew. We were not in touch with each other, but we all reported back to base. And
now, on the 8th of June, you went on what they, well, they call it an interdiction raid, where you're trying to prevent German troop movements. Tell us a bit about that. And you may have done that a couple of times. So.
We did. We did several raids on railway sidings, basically in various points in France, to prevent any German troop movements up to Normandy. And most of these raids were very successful.
And anything you remember about them, or is that it? You know, because you couldn't see much.
This was just it. I could see very little. It wasn't until we went on our daylights that I was able to see things. But
now, what about the raid on Caen? There's raid on Caen in this period as well.
Yes. Our particular raid on Caen was not all that successful.
Now, what were the problems?
The main reason being that, of course, on the beachhead, there were so many ships and boats, and also transport on the coast, that really confused us on our H2S. It was it was a fantastic sight. But as a result of that, our actual marking was a bit scattered.
Did you actually hit Caen? Or?
Oh, yes. Yes, it was hit. But it was followed up again at a later date.
Now, other things, a low-level daytime formation flying attacks on, well, ammunition dumps, fuel dumps, things like that. Remember that?
Yeah. One thing that stands out and always will remain in my memory was our flying training in formation, Lank formation. Now, the Lank itself was not all that successful, not for close formation work. And on this particular occasion, we'd had one successful day, but on the second day, we were in the second Vic, flying just below our first three, when the pilot in the left or port of our formation was caught in the slipstream of one of the aircraft above. Now, he swung above us, missing us by a matter of a few feet, creating a hell of a turbulence. He then swung back over the top of us and ploughed straight into our leader, both aircraft then crashing, disintegrating and crashing. I must admit, it shook us. But after that, there was no more flying in formation.
So when you went, you just went as if...
We went in an open gaggle.
Now, any of these raids you remember of this period? You seem to be going across to France fairly frequently. V1 attacks, on V1 bomb launch sites.
Yes.
That's back end of June.
That's right. Well, of course, we were then diverted from our primary targets to bomb the flying bomb sites and the flying bomb stores, because these, as you now know, these flying bombs were pretty drastic and hitting the south of England and London, and therefore we were taken off our normal raids and were targeting these flying bomb sites and our launch sites and their storage depots. These were very difficult to find because they were so small. But again, most of the raids were quite successful.
Now, you were doing some training this time in the Jordan multi-purpose bomber trainer. This is sort of for bomber and navigation training. You tell us how this thing worked and what it was?
Yes, the Jordan trainer was primarily used by master bombers and like ourselves on the flare force to give us some idea of the training in circling a target. Now, the Jordan trainer consisted of a movable map of a certain area of Germany. Now, that was set in operation by the actual operator, who was positioned above this map, and it was operated by your feet, and you could select a particular target, and in doing so, when you press the bomb release, the indication of the actual bomb burst was given by a flashing bulb on this map below.
Now, how realistic was this in the sense of what you actually experienced?
It was realistic in as much that you got the right impression of a target moving below. But of course, one never saw a target in such detail on actual operation.
Now, you were doing that. Was this mainly training as a master bomber you were doing? Because it's from.
It was just part of our training as a bomb aimer. Well, a radar navigator, as it happened at that particular time.
Now, the other thing is that on one raid, you actually take over as master bomber. This is a raid on 12th of July.
That's
on
right.
Ravigny towards, a lot of French towns from the looks of it.
That's right.
Tell me what happened there. How did you come to take over?
Well, we were deputy master bomber on that occasion, and our master bomber's aircraft had gone US on the way to the target, so we had to take over the actual procedure.
Now, how did you actually do it? Tell us how you did it. What was the actual procedure of being master bomber?
Well, it involved the actual identification of the target and dropping the markers on the actual aiming point, and then remaining in the target area, instructing your fellow markers, backers up, and remaining literally in the target area for the duration of the actual raid itself.
Flying round and round.
We were flying round and round, yeah.
And you were communicating by wireless with the other aircraft?
Yes, by RT.
And what about with base?
And our wireless operator was in base, just keeping them informed of the actual raid itself.
Now, how well did it go?
From our own point of view, it was quite successful. I must admit, it was quite an experience from my own point of view.
Do you remember anything more about it? Or?
Not really.
Now, what about the 24th of July raid on Stuttgart? I know it's difficult for you. Do you remember anything about that? It's because that's an elusive target.
Yes. Stuttgart, as I said before, was a very elusive target. And in all, we did 5 raids on that particular city. And if I'm not mistaken, on this particular raid, it was quite a successful raid. Again, I think this is where our method of marking proved itself, with the flares being dropped. One, it gave their master bomber that opportunity of being able to find the aiming point, rather than relying on H2S. Here again, being in that, the target being in that position, the responses on H2S were very poor.
Because it was in a valley?
In a valley, yeah.
Now then you seem to do some more raids on French targets, flying bomb stores and targets.
Yes.
And depots.
That's right.
And on the 6th of August, you were hit. The aircraft was hit during a raid. Now what do you remember about that?
I think that was on one of our daylight raids, if I'm not mistaken. We were operating at a slightly lower level, and the anti-aircraft fire was very, very accurate. And we were hit, not drastically, but we had a peppering of light shrapnel. No one was injured, and no damage was done to the any vital part of the aircraft.
So it's just a couple of holes? And
a couple of holes, yeah.
Anything else? In moving into August now, well, that's August, but more raids on oil storage depots, and then Königsberg.
Yes. Königsberg was another major raid.
Now tell us about that, because you seem to have problems there again.
That's right. Again, the master bomber could not get the raid going because of cloud. There was a 10-tenths cloud over the target, and we were all having to do a vector away from the target until such time as we were called in to drop our flares. There was some 20 minutes, and it was quite a harassing time, because there were fighters and there were numerous searchlights. All
we actually have. I mean, were your gunners firing, or because you are?
Yes,
and you are.
Our rear gunner and the mid upper gunner were firing. And again, we were so lucky; we were not hit. We eventually were called in to drop our flares, and the raid was reckoned to be one of the most successful ever carried out by Fire Group. There was vast damage done in Königsberg.
So despite all the trouble, it had done well?
It had, yes. The one vital factor there is when we were coming back over Denmark, we were harassed by a German fighter, and I think that was the only time I ever got into the front turret, because this thing was, we were in and out of cloud all the time, and this thing was being a damn nuisance. But we did eventually evade him.
Now, moving into September, you're raiding on Germany again, Darmstadt, Stuttgart, Westermund, Bremerhaven, same place.
Yeah.
Anything about those raids you remember?
Yes, Darmstadt was a very, very successful raid, and a great deal of damage was done there. And in fact, it was reckoned to be, by the Germans, one of the terror raids carried out by the RAF. And in fact, I think you'll find that this was one of the raids that Max Hastings covered in his book of Bomber Command.
Remember anything in particular about the raid for you, or was it?
From our own point of view, it was very successful. The marking was good, and as I say, from our point of view, I think on that particular raid I obtained an aiming point again.
And then the next day, 12th, 13th of September, Stuttgart again, another successful raid.
Yes.
Bremerhaven, another successful raid. Well, you know, lots of
people. That's right. Bremerhaven was never attacked again after that. A great deal of damage was done by a very small force. Again, the fire damage was colossal. And I, going back to the Stuttgart raid, I think there it was one of the most damaging and created one of the most fatal raids from the population point of view.
And then Mönchengladbach?
Yes, Mönchengladbach. That was to be our last raid with Pathfinders. That day, Guy Gibson was our master bomber, and he came to lunch with us in the mess prior to briefing. And from my own point of view, it was not a very successful raid, because my H2S started to play up whilst I was about 20 miles away from our flare release point, and the only thing we could do was to back up those already over the target. We heard Gibson's instructions. They were very plain and to the point. And when we got back to base, we learned that he had not returned. And sometime later, of course, we found out that he'd crashed in Holland, and both he and his navigator were killed.
So, but that was your last raid. Now, that how did you feel again? I mean, I presume the same way.
Yes. We knew that would be the end then of our operations.
There was no question of a third tour.
No question of a third tour. We were very, very pleased about the way things had gone. And that night, we took our ground crew into Boston and had a very happy evening. And that was followed again by, I think, about a couple of weeks' leave.
And how did you feel about the crew breaking up? I mean, there'd been everything to you for a year or so.
Yes, I think that was the most heartbreaking time, because none of us realised what had happened to each other. We were all posted to various stations. I was posted to headquarters, 5 Group, where I remained for a fortnight, assisting the group bombing leader.
Now, where was that? In what way? So, where did you go? You went
To Swinderby. Yeah. The headquarters was just outside Swinderby.
And what exactly were you doing there?
Well, I was just assisting the bombing leader. There were one or two raids during that period. And I was watching the procedure that they did at group.
So how were you assisting him? Do you see what I mean?
More or less observing. Then, after a fortnight, I was posted back to my old base at East Kirkby as the base radar navigation and bombing trainer, bomb aimer trainer.
So you were actually back to your old
back to my old original base at East Kirkby. There I had offices, one opposite the MT section, the other next to the squadron office in 630 squadron, and my main instructional office was attached to the radar section between the two squadrons.
Now, what was in your offices and your lecture room?
Well, it was equipped with H2S equipment and G. And whilst there, I'd only been there about a fortnight, when I was posted to Newmarket to undertake a course on the American long-range equipment, Loran.
Now, tell us about that, because I've not heard anything about that.
No. Loran was a long-range navigational aid, similar to G from a operational point of view, but instead of using ground waves, used waves reflected from the ionosphere, which meant that this could be used on very long distances. I must admit my memory is a bit hazy on this now, but I always looked upon it has been slightly simpler to use than G, although maybe not quite as accurate, but now, still very effective.
Once you'd been trained in it, did you then train others in it, and was it brought into use?
Yes, it was. For the time I was away at Newmarket, and by the way, at Newmarket we were flying from the Rowley Mile as our runway, and I was flying in Halifax's there on my training flight, and if anything convinced me that the Lancaster was the best aircraft, those few weeks at Newmarket certainly proved the point.
Now, what was wrong with, what was wrong with the Halifax?
I think it was more psychological than anything.
In what way?
Just the impression that one got. The G in these aircraft were down the fuselage of the aircraft, isolated from the nav table, which seemed extraordinary. But here again, of course, we were operating with the new American stuff, which was on the table. So we had to share our time between operating the Loran on these flights and G. But as I say, sitting back in the fuselage operating the G was not a very pleasant situation. At least I didn't think so.
Now, what happened when you got back? Tell us about your training role. How did it work?
Well, we were assessed at the end of the training at Newmarket. These flights that we did, there was the odd one down to the south of France, but most of them were on cross countries within the country, England itself. And I found them very interesting. And I liked the equipment and didn't find it too difficult to operate. When I got back to East Kirkby, I found that a mock-up of the equipment had been installed in my office in the radar section. And there I continued giving lectures and practical demonstrations.
On the Loran as well?
On the Loran.
Now, was it actually in use? I mean, was it on British aircraft?
Yes, it was. Latterly, it was used. And in fact, I've got one of the first charts used on a far eastern target, which I use as part of my instruction, as a demonstration on my instruction.
Now, did you enjoy your training role?
Yes, it was quite interesting, but I must admit I was shaken by... I flew with several of these pilots and crews, and I must admit I was damn glad I'd finished my operations, because I certainly would have not had the confidence with flying with some of them.
What do you mean? Was there a decline in quality in the crews?
No, I think it was the... possibly the attitude. There didn't seem to be that coordination with some that we had within our own crew. And I suppose it's by virtue of the fact that we stuck together through our two operations, that with our experiences that we'd had, brought us together much closer. Some of these crews that I were flying with at that time were probably only done two or three operations on the squadron. And, I thought, well, I'm damn glad I'm not operating with you.
Now, what sort of things were they doing that were worrying you?
Well, there was one particular incident that I couldn't believe my eyes. We were on a training exercise, and we were then flying below 10,000 feet, and then the pilot went up above, up to about 12,000 feet, and he literally passed out at his controls. He hadn't bothered to put his oxygen on. And now that was a hell of a frightening moment, and I was damn glad when we got back down and back on terra firma.